The Guardian.
This is Politics Weekly. I'm Heather Stewart.
Labour respects the decision of the British people in the referendum, but no one can respect the conduct of the British government since the vote took place.
Jeremy Corbyn told the party faithful he's ready to vote down Theresa May's Brexit deal and take her on in a general election.
Let me say to the country, as it stands, Labour will vote against the Chequers plan or whatever is left of it and oppose leaving the EU with no deal.
As the Labour conference closes for another year, we look back on a good-tempered, if sometimes fraught, internal struggle to come to a collective position on Brexit.
So if Parliament votes down the Prime Minister's deal, or she can't reach a deal, that is not the end of the debate.
And it's not all Brexit. There were some genuinely radical policy announcements too, not least from John McDonnell.
So after decades of talking about industrial democracy, Labour and government will legislate to implement it.
We'll hear from the Shadow City Minister, Jonathan Reynolds.
Well, I think it's radical, but that doesn't mean it isn't credible or effective at the same time.
So I'm joined by our own Pippa Creerer. Pippa, we've just come out of the conference hall where we watched Jeremy Corbyn deliver his speech, interrupted several times by rounds of "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." They loved it inside the hall, didn't they? What stuck out for you?
Well, it was really, for me, Jeremy Corbyn setting out his stall and saying that Labour is now ready to take charge. There wasn't much policy details beyond expanding on his theme of green jobs and a little bit on childcare, which obviously is going to be a really popular retail offer. But it was more about sort of setting the tone, making it clear that Labour was ready with the sort of direction it was going to go in once they took power, and appealing to both to activists within the room, giving that sort of hopeful vision of a future government under Labour, but also to people outside the hall who will be watching on TV at home tonight or listening on the radio, reading about it, obviously, in The Guardian, and making it clear to them that Labour was primed, that he was ready to get the keys to number 10 should there be a snap general election this autumn after all.
It's a bit of a section on Brexit, wasn't it, which has obviously been the issue of the week here. He made very clear that no options are off the table should Theresa May's deal be voted down, which, of course, is the policy that the conference here has agreed to this week. He also said, didn't he, look to Theresa May, he made what he said was a kind of offer. If you're willing to embrace a customs union and if you can secure workers' rights and environmental standards, Labour will back you. That won't be something that those campaigners sitting there in the hall with bollocks to Brexit stickers on will want to hear, will it?
Well, he has tread very carefully in Brexit, and it's been really interesting watching them walking along this tightrope all week, because obviously the vast majority of the Labour membership, and particularly sort of the grassroots vocal momentum activists that are here at the conference, really don't like Brexit at all, would rather we could actually have a vote to remain in the European Union and not even be talking about the different options and what different Brexit might look like. However, there's a large number of Labour seats in traditional towns of the north and around the rest of the country, which actually where Labour went backwards at the last election, where they voted leave. So he has to be really aware that there is a core of Labour voters that don't want to hear the message, actually, we think this is all a terrible idea and we want to try and reverse it if we possibly can. What they want to hear is what Labour actually could offer as an alternative to the government strategy. And for them, that's very much about a jobs-first Brexit that protects their living standards, the economy and their way of life.
He also talked, didn't he, and sort of confronted directly the issue of anti-Semitism and the fact that, you know, much of Labour's summer was spent sort of firefighting this row.
The row over anti-Semitism has caused immense hurt and anxiety in the Jewish community and great dismay in the Labour Party. But I hope and believe we can work together to draw a line under it. I say this to all in the Jewish community. This party, this movement, will always be implacable campaigners against anti-Semitism and racism in all its forms.
Yeah, I mean, he set out, said that the summer had been tough for Labour, that's the word that he used, made it clear that he thought the people in the hall and the Labour Party more widely, the Labour movement, had to listen to communities that, as he said, suffer from discrimination, name-checked the Jewish community, who obviously have been on the receiving end of such opprobrium over the summer. He says, I hope we can work together to draw a line under it. I mean, it's just a real plea to some elements, the fringe elements of the left, the Labour Party's left, that have been really sort of verging on anti-Semitic comments and so on over the summer. Much of it on social media, and obviously much of it was called out over the summer too. He also, however, made the point that he didn't accept attacks from what he described as Tory hypocrites who were quick to jump on these allegations of anti-Semitism from within the party, some of them at the highest levels of the party, when they themselves had responsible for the hostile environment strategy, for example, when Tory MPs backed Viktor Orban, the right-wing Hungarian Prime Minister, in the European Parliament. So while he said, yes, our own side needs to get its house in order, he wasn't letting them off the hook either.
And he had a bash at the press, didn't he, which is a tactic straight out of the populist playbook.
Yeah, it really is. And actually, there'll be journalists in that hall from all sectors of the press who will have felt a bit uncomfortable about that. He was talking about journalists, multi-billionaire media barons running the press and therefore influencing democracy. But of course, not all papers or news organisations are run by multi-billionaires. And he was talking about them promoting lies and half-truths. And the quote that really stood out for me was that many papers, much of the media, smear the powerless, not take on the powerful. Now, I really take issue with that. It makes me feel a bit uncomfortable, to be honest, thinking about this sort of, I mean, it is, as you mentioned, like the Trump playbook, it's this sort of idea that the media can't be trusted. And I think we've got to be really careful that we don't go down that line in this country too.
The overall message, wasn't it, was a sort of inspiring one of, you know, it doesn't have to be like this and Britain can be a better place, which we heard sort of quite a lot from Jeremy Corbyn. And to some extent, this was a bit of a greatest hits. But those people in the hall will have gone away, won't they, thinking, you know, he said to them, hopefully by the next time we meet next year, we'll have a Labour government.
And as they walked out the hall, they were swinging their Jeremy Corbyn scarves, singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn," they'll have had a spring in their step, ready to go back to their constituencies and campaign for Labour and try and help him deliver on that.
And so the members here are going home happy. There's a sense that after a successful week here in Liverpool, the party's increasingly focused on taking control should the government fall. But running through the conference from start to finish has been the complex internal struggle on how to tackle the biggest political issue of our time, Brexit. On Sunday, the exact wording of the conference floor debate motion was painstakingly assembled with representatives from over 100 constituency Labour parties up and down the UK. On Monday, the party leadership appeared to quash any talk of a new in or out referendum, but on Tuesday, Shadow Brexit Secretary Keir Starmer took to the stage.
Our preference is clear. We want a general election to sweep away this failed government. Having swept them away, we want to install a radical Labour government capable of transforming this country. And that's what should happen after 2 years of negotiations ending in failure. But if that's not possible, we must have other options. And conference, that must include campaigning for a public vote. It's right that Parliament has the first say. It's right that Parliament has the first say. But if we need to break the impasse, our options must include campaigning for a public vote, and nobody is ruling out Remain as an option.
A sustained standing ovation, at least in parts of the hall, hinting that on this at least, the membership is some way ahead of Jeremy Corbyn's carefully worded non-committals. And as the audience filed out, it was clear that this is an issue members are thinking hard about, not least those who took part in that Sunday night compositing meeting.
I think I was in the compositing meeting. I think it's a very good workable compromise. It allows the leadership flexibility. But at the same time, it reflects the deep dissatisfaction in the country with the way the Tories are handling that whole issue. So I think it's a very good... And it leaves everything open as a possibility, including a second vote by the people on whatever deal's put forward, should that prove necessary. But it reflects the fact that what we really want is a general election to get the Tories out. My CLP, which is Bristol East, has mandated me to support a second vote if there isn't a general election. What I certainly don't want to see is for a no-deal Brexit or for a Tory-deal Brexit that makes the conditions of ordinary people in this country a million times worse.
I was in the compositing meeting, so I'm really happy with the position because I saw how hard we all worked, how well we all compromised and how unified we were. So the motion that we put before conference this morning is the best motion for the party and it's definitely moved us, our position forward, and I think we should be proud how unified we are as a party on it now.
So if Parliament votes down the Prime Minister's deal, or she can't reach a deal, That is not the end of the debate. And Labour must step up again and shape what happens next.
I like Keir a lot. I'm a bit of a fan of his, but I don't agree with him on Brexit at all. I don't want a people's vote. We've had a vote. I think it's insulting to people to rerun it in whatever form you want to call it. And we differ on that one, me and him. I voted for Brexit. I want to leave the EU because I think it's a corrupt institution. And that doesn't leave me much wriggle room, really. Does it? It's a corrupt institution. I want it abolished, ideally, and something else put in its place. But failing that, I'll have a general election, and we'll win it, and we'll make the best of a bad job.
I didn't vote because I wasn't old enough in 2016, but I would have voted to remain. But now, you know, the delegate who stood up and spoke about how the people in his constituency voted to leave because of the dilapidation in that area. I agree. I think that it is insulting and it's classist for a lot of middle class people in the Labour Party to turn around and say, oh no, we'll fix it, don't worry, we'll fix it, we'll have a people's vote. You know, if there was to be a second referendum, I'd probably vote to remain, but I don't want there to be, and I want us to do the best that we can, and I genuinely believe that Labour are in a much better position to negotiate. They're much more respected by the institutions in the EU, and we will get a better deal for the country.
Well, in the end, party members voted overwhelmingly to keep the options open on a second referendum. But for MPs in heavily Leave voting areas, it's left them in an awkward spot. I caught up with Gareth Snell, the MP for Stoke Central.
Gareth, Brexit has been the issue of the week, really, hasn't it? Kind of on the conference floor and off the conference floor. Is it helpful that Labour's clarified its position in the way that it has after that very long compositing meeting?
I'm not entirely sure we've clarified our position, really. What we appear to have done is found a happy fudge to get us through conference where the members are happy. What we haven't done as a party is start to talk about the big issues that drove people to vote leave in their numbers in constituencies like mine 2 years ago. And that's an opportunity that we've missed, because if we were starting to address those issues, we would earn back the right to be heard and could go back to the next general election. We can go back to those communities as a credible party of government.
And do you worry, is it worrying that there now is a perception, or maybe a perception, that Labour wants to overturn that referendum, wants to reverse that referendum? How will that go down with your voters?
Oh, that'll go down like a lead balloon in Stoke-on-Trent. And already I've had emails from constituents telling me that they don't know why Labour doesn't want to listen to them on the referendum. They've had their say. And this is something I've been saying for a while now, which is, you know, in our traditional heartland communities, simply saying, have another go, please, because we think you got it wrong, isn't going to deliver a change in their views. Their lives have not substantially changed since the last time they voted, so why would we expect their vote to change this time? And my big fear now is that the Labour Party has always been a coalition of mirror readers and Guardian readers, and my fear now is, as much as I like the Guardian, that we are not going to take those mirror readers with us, and we're going to end up becoming a party of metropolitan city centres, young graduates and people who are, you know, would be considered by some to be the elite, and that isn't the Labour Party that I want to be part of.
So what do you say to those MPs and those activists who are campaigning for a people's vote, as they very vociferously call it, and who say, you know, we think this is going to be economically damaging, so we should be trying to stop it?
I say to them that we are leaving the European Union on the 29th of March. That is something that Parliament has voted to determine. The way I see it, we either leave with a deal or we leave without a deal. And having more conversations about processes, more conversations that are more interested about what parliamentarians do than what real people are thinking about, doesn't change the circumstances in the day-to-day lives of the people we all seek to represent, and our energy and focus should always be on improving their lives.
And what about the argument that people's vote campaigners make, that Labour would gain votes by taking a clearer stance against Brexit?
But it's where those votes come from, because we may stack up votes in seats we already hold, but our challenge as a party is to reach out to those marginal Conservative voting seats in the Midlands, the East and the West Midlands, the North East and in Wales, and convince those voters to vote Labour, and they are not in the same position as the party at the moment.
Gareth Snell there. Well, after that, I trooped off to chair a fringe meeting on Brexit. One of those on my panel was the chair of Momentum, John Landsman.
John, you were saying in the debate that we've just been taking part in that you feel Labour's position after today is clearer and that there's been a kind of an outbreak of unity in the party.
Well, I think the party's... I think it was a unifying composite. I mean, it's great that, you know, out of a 150-plus motions, we've ended up with a single composite, and, you know, that has united, a very broad section of the party, in spite of the fact that, obviously, people do have different opinions and strong opinions on this issue, because Brexit has, divided people in within parties, you know, as well as, you know, out there and, amongst people who aren't involved in politics.
And you were saying it's essential, really, to maintain some, or it's unavoidable to have some kind of ambiguity about the position, because we don't know what's going to happen next.
Well, there are far too many hypotheticals, about the process still, about at every level of the process, you know, the process of the so-called negotiations between the government and the EU, about the parliamentary process, you know, the government's in control, we're not, they don't reveal everything, you know, all their plans. There are lots of interactions between the Tory right and the government, between, you know, different parties within the EU, we don't know actually what are going to be the most critical votes and when and the precise circumstances. So, actually trying to hold a party together and to hold your supporters, you know, as supporters and to attract people who voted different ways, does require, you know, some ambiguity and not perfect clarity.
And you also talked about the idea that Labour members and the party as a whole could become involved again at other crucial moments in this process when Labour MPs have to make decisions about Brexit.
Well, I think it's an important principle that the party should be involved in making critical decisions. And I think, you know, for me, the most obvious kind of historical example of that is when the Labour Party had a special conference on a day in 1939, the day that Britain declared war. And the outcome of that conference enabled Attlee to walk across Westminster, the Parliament Square, in order to transmit, the message of the Labour Party, the whole Labour Party, not just Labour MPs, and support the, you know, Chamberlain's declaration of war.
This party position we've reached after that five-hour meeting with Keir Starmer, it's still quite a long way off Labour going out and fighting to reverse Brexit, isn't it? Which there are plenty of members here who would say that's what they'd like to see.
Well, I think there are a range of views, and, you know, there are plenty of people, you know, who want to do that, but people represent different constituencies, and, you know, it's not actually a left-right issue. It's not it's about the nature of the place that MPs represent for those MPs, you know, if we're talking about MPs, or the nature of the towns and cities in which people live. And Yvette Cooper talked about, you know, the difference between town and cities, and, you know, I think, you know, most metropolitan areas are far more remain than you know, lots and lots of towns, and, you know, that's because, you know, that's for kind of real economic and social reasons. So obviously people are going to have different views, and they're going to have different messages.
Momentum's John Landsman there. Well, it hasn't all been Brexit this week. On Monday, the Shadow Chancellor set out a radical new vision for Britain's economy, including renationalising water suppliers and shaking up the way large companies are run.
So after decades of talking about industrial democracy, Labour in government will legislate to implement it. And as Jeremy announced yesterday, a third of the seats on company boards will be allocated to workers so they have democratic rights at work again.
Well, that speech was warmly received in the hall here, but jumped on immediately by business groups who warned of investors fleeing the country. I caught up with Labour Shadow City Minister Jonathan Reynolds.
Well, I think it's radical, but that doesn't mean it isn't credible or effective at the same time, and that's a very important message we need to get out. If you look at things like, you know, greater workplace representation on boards or in extending employee share ownership, I do think those are the areas where we've got to start looking as we all sort of come to some degree of consensus that the economic current model Britain has does need to change. We need to address the very difficult problems people have in terms of wages, of low productivity, of regional inequality. And I think for a lot of the business audience here, a message for them is, well, we know uncertainty and volatility is a difficult environment to do business in, but Britain as a country has to recognise what are the drivers of that volatility. And it is the fact that the last 10 years have been very hard for a lot of people in Britain. The economic model as people see it isn't delivering. You know, they can't, in very simple terms, they can't get on the property ladder. They can't, even if they're in full-time work, perhaps feed their family without having to use food banks from time to time. We have to address those things, and we feel we're trying to do that. And interestingly, I do believe the economy is one area where actually much of the Labour Party is broadly in agreement, and they recognise what's happened in terms of the anger for the Brexit vote, and that makes it a very interesting conversation.
The scale of some of those policies is quite big, isn't it? We're talking about one third of the board being made up of workers, for example. That would be a huge shift, wouldn't it, for a lot of companies? You're not worried that some companies might be frightened off from investing in Britain?
We're always very keen to stress it. If you look at what is at the core of what Labour's trying to do, it's to end austerity in terms of the squeeze on day-to-day spending, so we have a set of tax rises that match our spending commitments, but it's also for a substantial increase in public investment. And we are absolutely conscious that in order to fulfil those plans, we need investor confidence, we need to make sure that people know this is going to be a safe place to do business in, and we believe we can do that. Yeah, even the Prime Minister herself has flirted with the idea of workers on boards. It's not an idea which is in any way, you know, alien to any business doing that business in another part of Europe. And I do think on things like public ownership in water, there's a different argument from us today than perhaps the one that Labour was pursuing in the 1980s. It's not, you know, profitable companies in the private sector we're trying to take over. We're looking at things like the water industry. Like, some of the most scathing criticism of privatised water has been in the Financial Times in the UK. You know, it's the fact that so much of the profit has gone out in the way of dividends, and the investment has come from debt, and that means a lot of bill payers are getting a poor deal. Look, I think that's an argument people can recognise and respond to.
Labour's Jonathan Reynolds there. So at the end of a lively Labour conference here in Liverpool, what have we learned about the state of Britain's opposition party? I'm joined just outside the conference centre by my panel, political commentator Ellie May O'Hagan, Momentum's Lee Drennan and The Guardian's Dan Sabber. Ellie May, Labour had a big challenge this week, didn't it, to hold the party together over Brexit. You've got different pressures coming from MPs in different kinds of seats, from grassroots members. Have they managed that, do you think?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the commentary suggested that Labour is very divided over Brexit, and that's just not the experience that I've had here. You know, it's not landed on one side or the other with things like a second referendum, but I think actually it is united over Brexit, and I think actually they've done quite a good job of, you know, hashing out a difficult issue.
But Dan, it's sort of, that's right, isn't it, that it could have been a huge bust-up. It hasn't really been a huge bust-up. It's kind of a holding position, though, isn't it, going into the autumn?
Well, I think the difficulty for Labour is that, yeah, Labour's come out of it reasonably united, as Ellie May says, and you know, emotionally, the telling conference, obviously, when Keir Starmer said second referendum option is on the table, and that went down extremely well. But, of course, the reality is you've got to look at the politics of the country as a whole, and Labour strategists will go around and tell you that, you know, it's all very well being a sort of, you know, apparently on the side of Remain in terms of the membership and the sort of metropolitan seats, but there are an awful lot of seats in the north and the Midlands, you know, majorities are less than 3,000, where people are going around saying, well, for every two votes you'd for every one vote you'd gain, you'd potentially lose two, you know, and you've got Theresa May is going to go into conference with a kind of clear clear agenda with a party of Brexit. She's got a myriad of problems of her own, of course, but notwithstanding, there is a kind of a division opening up where Labour appears to be leaning towards Remain, at least the Keir Starmer end and the membership, and the Conservative Party in a different position, and that is the real challenge for Labour, really, the sort of the medium term politics here and how it plays out in the country rather than how it plays out in the party, even if in party terms it's been okay.
And Lee, the other thing that delegates here have spent quite a long time talking about is how to democratise and reform the party, mm-hmm. isn't it? Momentum would have liked Labour to go further than it has on that, wouldn't it?
Well, I think the Democracy Review was unfortunately a meagre reform. We would have liked to have gone further. I would have liked to have backed to open selections, but we didn't get that. But it's certainly a step in the right direction. I mean, I spoke in favour of the trigger ballot reform. I think it's, I use the argument, you know, it's jam today and campaign for more jam tomorrow. tomorrow.
And we should explain that that will make it a bit easier, won't it, for local activists to get rid of sitting MPs?
It's not about getting rid of sitting MPs. It's about being about the membership being able to hold their representatives to account. You have to remember, it's a very privileged position to be a Labour MP. And just to clarify, you know, any Labour MP with any basic social skills who doesn't hold their constituency party in contempt will have no issues here. You know, it's purely about making sure that people that represent us are accountable to the people who would knock on doors, who campaign for them, and put them where they are. Campaign-wise, obviously, it's the public that elect Labour MPs. But you know, if you're a Labour parliamentary candidate, you know that red rose carries a lot of responsibility with it, and we want to make sure that people stay true to it.
And as you say, Momentum would have liked an even broader, sort of more democratic, as it were, set of reforms, wouldn't it? Where there was open selection for MPs each time.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was it's jam today and campaign for more jam tomorrow. I think the long-term goal, in my opinion, should be open selections. I mean, I'm a local councillor. I face an open selection every time. I've been challenged in the past, and I have no problem with that. That's democracy. And it might, my ward party chose to reselect me, and constituency party should be free to do the same. I mean, selection campaigns, if you don't believe that your member of parliament is doing as good a job as they should or could do, it's very negative. You have to campaign negatively against your MP. We want to get away from that. It's about making sure there's a level playing field for everyone else. And if you're a Labour parliamentarian, you should be able to stand by your record and say, this is what I've done, this is why I think you should reselect me. Just like the 6,000 Labour councillors that we have nationally have to do every 4 years.
And Ellie May, Labour was quite distracted over the summer, wasn't it, by the anti-Semitism issue and other things. Do you think we've got more of a sense here that it's a party that's ready to go into government, that's got a kind of programme for Britain?
Absolutely. This is my 7th Labour conference, and I think even during the Miliband years, I didn't get a sense that a conference was so invested in debating policy as I have this time. And I think it's because there's a real sense that this is real. Like, these policies could actually be enacted in government. We might actually take power. We need to talk about what that means. And, you know, for all of the talk in the media about Jeremy Corbyn supporters being sort of blindly loyal, I've actually seen a lot of debate and criticism on the conference floor of policies that have been announced. Because, again, there is that sense in this conference that that this all might actually happen, so we need to dissect it. And, you know, last year after the upset in the general election, the mood at conference was just one big party. I had a great time, actually.
That's good to know.
Yeah, but this year it's been very much, it's felt much more serious. It's felt much more about work. I feel like people have come here to work, to actually build something. And I've been quite surprised by that. I wasn't sure what to expect, and that's something that has really struck me.
Dan, there was an intriguing little subplot about the idea of another deputy leader, a second deputy leader, wasn't there, which would be a woman. This was a good idea and then it wasn't a good idea.
Funny that, isn't it? Royal entertainment here. I mean, this is really all about Tom. This is all about Tom Watson, isn't it? Which was, and, you know, the senior Labour people, if you ask them in the right way, will sort of tell you that. Which is, you know, plan A was quite clearly, you know, Tom is not fully paid up to the Jeremy Corbyn project. He's got his own mandate and his own power base to some extent. Well, they wanted second deputy leader as a woman. That is not a bad idea in principle, arguably, you know, up and down the party. There needs to be a balance of gender representation between officers. It's quite normal for a constituency. That'd be quite normal for a constituency party, for example. So it's not, you know, it's a reasonable idea in one sense, but of course, as with everything, there's always politics, and the point was to sort of try and bring somebody in to sort of water down Tom's influence. The difficulty was, you know, 1 minute there was a motion from Wirra West, and then suddenly Wirra West decided, which is a Corbynite seat, Wirra West Labour Party decided, yeah, maybe we won't put it anymore. The problem was, difficulty was, that actually it would also give someone a mandate, a clear position that was different to Jeremy Corbyn. What would the issues of the campaign be, and who would be the most likely sort of winning candidate? Probably Angela Rayner, a very popular figure with many people in the party, but again, not necessarily fully paid up to the Corbyn project. What might the issues be? It might be the party's Brexit stance, and suddenly Labour would be dragged into an internal battle which might be won by someone or the other, you know, who would then be perhaps arguably seen as the obvious heir apparent. Is that what you want at this moment in time? I doubt it very much.
And Lee, Dan mentioned Angie Rayner there. She's been one of the sort of popular figures. One of the things that delegates do at conference is get a look up close at you know, Labour politicians from front benches to see who they think's promising, who maybe they can imagine being a future leader one day. Who's caught your eye this week?
Well, it's slightly awkward, that. I love Angela Rayner. Well, I helped, well, Angela Rayner is actually my MP. I'm her councillor, so I couldn't say anyone but Angela Rayner.
Team Angela.
But she is brilliant, just so everyone here can hear that, yeah. But there's a wide field of candidates, and I think there's some real talent in the Labour Party. Whoever takes over, obviously, you know, Ange, I'm backing you. But whoever takes over, I think the future's bright for the Labour Party, and I'll be interested to see which way momentum decides to go on that in the future.
Mm. And Ellie May, who's caught your eye? Who's impressed you this week?
Well, I also really like Angela. She's great. She's lovely as a person as well as a really impressive MP. But unfortunately, my favourite potential future leader was not here because she's on maternity leave, and that was, congratulations to her, that's Laura Pidcock. She's my favourite. I think she's such a star. I saw her speak in 2011 at a trade union event, and I went up to her and I said, I'm going to watch what you do because you're going to be big. And I think that was one of my most accurate political predictions. And it's a shame that she wasn't here, but obviously some things are more important than politics, so I hear. So hopefully next conference she'll have her time to shine.
And Dan, there were other speeches and moments that felt a little bit like leadership pitches, weren't there? Emily Thornberry did a sort of barnstorming speech yesterday that was quite well received. What's caught your eye?
Well, good speech from Emily for sure, but she's obviously Shadow Foreign Secretary. Not that much about foreign policy, but quite a bit about anti-Semitism and a sort of tough message. You know, anti-Semites in the Labour Party are like fascists. Strong language and quite artfully constructed. If you read the passage, you know, we don't need an anti-Nazi league, she said, because the Labour Party is the anti-Nazi league, and sort of name-checked a string of Labour figures, from history, but with a heavy emphasis on Jeremy and John McDonnell and figures from the present. So she's undoubtedly would see herself as a candidate. It is, although it is a bit sort of right now, I think there's a contest. There's a lot of emotional sort of support for Angela Rayner, but Sally May says these things happen in a moment in time, and you know, and somebody like Laura Pidcock's time could come. That is, if the contest is in a few years from now.
And before we go, I just want to hear what's been your most fun moment of conference, all of you. Lee, what have you most enjoyed?
I went for a pint with Jean-Luc Mélenchon the other night, and he gave me his little red triangle pin that he wears, which I thought was very nice of him, as a gift to Momentum, basically.
That's fantastic. Beat that, Ellie May.
I saw Owen Jones and Ian Lavery ride a bucking bronco, and that was probably my favourite bit.
Wow. Dan?
I think, well, Angela Rayner gave a sort of fantastic exposition of her credo at an event on Sunday, which is a lot of fun. And I'm secretly, I have to admit, I'm looking forward to Jeremy's speech.
Thank you all very much. Well, you can read all our politics and economics coverage every day at theguardian.com. So that's it from here in Liverpool. My thanks to my panel, Dan Sabber, Ellie May O'Hagan and Lee Drennan, and to all my guests. Politics Weekly rolls on to Birmingham next week, where the Conservatives will gather for their conference. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Heather Stewart. Thanks for listening.